Hi, this is Lawrence Person from BattleshornBlog.com. I'm doing an interview with Texas Senate candidate Ted Cruz, and this is July 30th. That's correct, yeah, July 30th, 2011. So, let's go ahead and get into the interview. First of all, nice generic question to start with. If elected senator, what do you think are the top three priorities Congress should tackle in 2013?
The very first thing Congress should do in 2013 is repeal every syllable of every word of Obamacare. The second thing Congress should do in 2013 is significantly reduce the size, spending, and power of the federal government. Pass a new budget that caps the federal budget, that cuts the federal budget, that caps spending going forward, and that proposes and sends to the state a strong, balanced budget amendment that requires supermajority to raise taxes and that limits federal spending to a percentage of GDP. And the third thing Congress should do is significantly scale back the job-killing regulatory overreach that the Obama administration has pushed forward that is stifling small business across the country and is destroying jobs all across this nation.
Okay. How do you think your experience as Solicitor General of Texas prepared you to be a U.S. Senator?
Well, the Solicitor General, as you know, is the chief lawyer for the state of Texas in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. And I served as Solicitor General 5.5 years. And during that time, over and over again, Texas led the nation, standing up, fighting to defend conservative principles, and winning on a national level. What we need right now, Lawrence, is principled, effective, strong conservative fighters. In my opinion, the central issue in the Republican primary for U.S. Senate in Texas is one question. Which candidate is best prepared to stand up and lead the fight to stop the Obama agenda, to defend free market principles, and to defend the U.S. Constitution? As Solicitor General, over and over again, I stood up and led the fight, and we need a fighter who is principled, who won't back down, and can win the fight.
Okay. Now, you were the 10th Amendment scholar at the Texas Public Policy Institute. In what areas do you think the federal government has violated the intent of the 10th Amendment, and what steps should be undertaken to reinstate the 10th Amendment as a guiding principle at the national level?
It is a fantastic question, and I will say as an initial point, what I am probably best known for nationally is being one of the leading defenders in the nation of the 10th Amendment, and of shrinking the size, power, and spending of the federal government. It is difficult to point to an area of the federal government that has not expanded out of control in excess of the text of the Constitution and the original understanding of the framers. When I was leading the Center for 10th Amendment Studies, we issued a number of papers laying out a number of areas and detailing the history of the Supreme Court decisions and the federal government overreach that has expanded it. In my view, we need to be serious and systematic, shrinking the size, power, and spending of the federal government across the board. And in particular, we are headed towards a fiscal and economic crisis. Right now, this federal government, 40 cents of every dollar that it spends is borrowed, much of it from foreign nations whose interests are not our own. And we need to shrink it on every front. I can tell you there will be no member of the U.S. Senate who is pushing more vigorously to shrink the size, power, and the spending of the federal government than I will be.
Okay. Speaking of overreach, a battle is currently raging in Washington, D.C. over what programs to cut or eliminate to reduce the deficit. If elected, which programs would you be willing to eliminate, and which ones would you be willing to cut, and how by how much?
You would be hard-pressed to come up with a program that I would not be willing to cut. But I will also say, you know, I think one of the lessons conservatives need to learn is we need to learn from history what's effective and what's not. In 1995, when Republicans took over Congress, the principal focus for shrinking the size of the federal government was on eliminating specific programs. And we invested a lot of political energy in doing that, and it didn't get done. If you look at the dollars at stake, I think it is far more effective to look at across-the-board cuts than to target specific programs, because when you target specific programs, the dollars at stake are too small. So where I would focus the bulk of my energy is on two things. Number one, across-the-board cuts that shrink the size of the federal government. And number two, fundamental entitlement reform. Two-thirds of the federal budget consists of entitlements and interest on the national debt, which means that any candidate that says that he or she is serious about balancing the budget and addressing our deficit and debt, who is not willing to undertake fundamental entitlement reform, that candidate is not telling the truth, because you can't balance the budget without getting serious about entitlements.
Okay, let's jump back to the 10th Amendment issue for just a minute. Which Supreme Court case do you think represents the most egregious example of federal overreach and abuse of the Commerce Clause?
I think the most egregious is a case called Wickard against Filburn. And Wickard, as you know, is a case where the U.S. Supreme Court concluded that it was permissible to regulate a farmer growing wheat in his own backyard. And the Supreme Court, as you know, the Commerce Clause, which is the principal avenue that has justified the explosion of federal government power, gives Congress the power to regulate commerce between the states, interstate commerce. And, you know, on one level, thinking as, say, an ordinary, reasonable, rational human being applying the words, a farmer growing in the backyard, planting wheat, harvesting wheat, and consuming wheat with his or her family, which was what the facts were in Wickard against Filburn, would not be engaging in interstate commerce. The Supreme Court engaged in this reasoning that they essentially said, well, if you're growing your own wheat, you're not going to the store and buying wheat. And if you went to the store and bought wheat, some of that would come from interstate. So by not going to the store and buying wheat, you're engaging in interstate commerce. It was sort of a, knee bone is connected to the leg bone type reasoning. And the problem with that reasoning is if that's true, everything and anything you do affects interstate commerce. That's not what the U.S. Constitution says. It's not what the framers to the Constitution understood. It's wrong. And it is the foundation of the arguments the Obama administration has used for Obamacare. And for precisely that reason, I think Obamacare is likewise unconstitutional, because the decision not to purchase insurance is not engaging in interstate commerce.
Okay. An inability to control the border with Mexico is a big issue for both the nation in general and Texas in specific. Do you favor a path to citizenship for illegal aliens already in the U.S., stricter border enforcement, and or the building of a border wall, or some other policy or combination of policies?
Well, there were a lot of questions in that piece. Let me lay out my position on immigration, because I can state it simply and in one sentence. I am strongly opposed to illegal immigration. I am categorically opposed to amnesty. And I strongly support legal immigrants who follow the rules and come here seeking to work towards the American dream. Now, with respect to securing the borders, I approach this from the perspective of someone who spent much of his adult life in law enforcement. It makes utterly no sense that we don't know who's coming into this country. We don't know the criminal backgrounds. Our borders are largely unsecured. And particularly in a post-9/11 world, that is lunacy. I support any and all possible efforts to secure the borders. That includes fences, that includes walls, that includes technology, that includes helicopters, that includes drones, that includes manpower, that includes employment verification, that includes approaching it as a law enforcement priority. And right now, neither party is serious about doing that. With respect to a path to citizenship or amnesty, I categorically oppose it. And the reason is, I've spent a lifetime working to defend the Constitution and uphold the rule of law. And it is fundamentally unfair and contrary to the rule of law to reward those who break the law. And, you know, one of the people it's most unfair to are those that are following the laws. There are immigrants who wait years and even decades to come here legally. And yet, what amnesty programs say is that we're going to take those that have chosen to break the law and we're going to reward them rather than insist that people follow the law. I don't think that's fair, I don't think that's right, and I don't support it.